Welcome to On...
Go on, then.
Welcome to On the Grid, where I'm looking back to the weekend when my television was packed with motorsport entertainment and excitement. I watched the drama-filled IndyCar race at Barber Motorsport Park, where the Penske scandal was still hot news, and Georgina was one of the stars of the show. Then I watched the MotoGP boys down in Spain at their brilliant best. I did watch the Monaco Formula E front wing smashing peloton, as they call it, as they jostle for position in their little pack. Back home, the British GT and BTCC put on great shows in a rain-affected Britain, as usual. Then back over the States, the NASCAR, we had the Dover duel between Dirty Den and Cuddly Kyle, as I've decided to call him. We've got Dirty Den, we can have Cuddly Kyle. And not forgetting, I also watched, to my rather disappointment, the world's first autonomous racing league race in Bahrain, which was actually very forgettable. But now, while I was watching all of that, bringing you the news from around the world, Paul was either sitting on a boat in Monaco or sitting behind World Rally Stars in Italy.
I've had a pinch me weekend, I have to say. Went to the Monaco Formula E with Cupra, snuck onto the Jaguar boats, but don't tell Cupra that. But it was phenomenal. So Formula E, my first ever Formula E, actually. And was it interesting? Was it exciting? It's always good when you're there and you're in the pits and you're talking to different people.
We'll
meeting the drivers.
We'll come to that one later, yeah. And then
that was good.
Champagne good on the boats, was it? That's the most important thing in Monaco.
Champagne was lovely. Yeah,
good.
Thank you very much.
Chilled.
Champagne was
cold
very nice.
Enough, was it for you?
But it was just about right, actually, Tiff. Your perfect ambient temperature. But for me, the highlight, my goodness gracious. I've been away with Pirelli for a couple of days, who, of course, look after you at Thruxton. And they have put on the most incredible show with World Rally Championship, with the World Rally Championship as well. Thierry Neuville, who is hot favourite to win this year, and he was joined as Elfin might disagree with that, but he's certainly in the lead at the moment.
Yeah.
And Sebastian Ogier as well.
Oh.
Just unbelievable. You know, you're just hanging out with 8-time world champion and possibly a new world champion this year, but hanging out with them, having dinner with them, and most importantly, went out in the car with Thierry, which was, I've never known anything like it. When I go sideways with you, and when anyone that does that Thruxton thing with you, you're hitting the apexes every time, which surprises me, you know, when you're power sliding. But these guys are doing it just on gravel. It was a gravel sort of mountain road in Sardinia. And these guys are doing it in a car where the road's always moving. There's boulders, there's bushes. It was the most unbelievable experience that I've had in a car. It was just mesmerizing. But it all felt super... You know, the best driver is always the most, the smoothest drivers. And it just, bizarrely, it felt so smooth. I thought it was 100 miles an hour, you know, put like that. But it was incredibly smooth. That Thierry
The lasting impression, because I was with both McRae and Richard Burns, you know, so lucky to passenger both of those. And that was the overriding thing for me, how smooth it all seemed. The noise going on underneath is incredible, but the suspension takes a lot of those shocks out of the chassis. So you don't really feel the bumps. You hear it all. But the drivers, they just seem to glide. You don't know where the next corner is, what's happening round the bend, apart from a pace, though. But it's an amazing experience. Then you end up back on the water again, didn't you, down in Italy as well?
Yeah, but before that, I do want to say that the thing that surprised me the most, other than the smoothness, was the braking. Because you're braking on gravel, downhill, which you've always told me is much harder to go down than up, which is common sense, I guess. So they're braking. They're sort of out of control braking. You think, well, this is going to end in tears now.
We're off.
And
we're off.
But it's the opposite. And they're just power away. And sensational. Absolutely. The WRC should have more followers than any other motorsport, because the skill of these boys is just phenomenal. And they're super nice guys as well.
Have we got a little video of your smiling, screaming space to come up on YouTube shortly?
We have, yes, coming on YouTube. We've got quite a few videos to come on YouTube, but we have. And I had the pleasure of sitting next to Seb last night, and we just had a chat. And I said, look, why don't you try and rewrite history? Because for those of you who don't know, Sebastian Ogier has got 9 world championships.
Yep.
And the other Seb
Sebastian Loeb.
Sorry, Loeb has got 9, and Ogier's got 8.
Yeah.
And but now he's only coming into a few races in the season. I just said, why don't you just maybe look to rewrite a bit of history? And he's been very good for him. He wants to spend time with his family and his son, but he might watch his space. He might come back next year. But I whatever he does, I wish him well. What a lovely, lovely man, as
Yeah.
was Thierry as well. And yes, on a boat with the Luno Rossa Pirelli America's Cup team as well. So we've been out, actually not on their boat. We've been chasing their boats, and we were doing
Okay.
40 knots in a speedboat, and we couldn't even keep up with them. And that wasn't even the proper America's Cup boat. That was the AC4, which is like a training boat. It's just incredible, incredible. If Carlsberg did weekends, it would be this type of weekend. So thank you to Anthony and all the guys at Pirelli as well. And I heard a bit of gossip whilst he's Monaco, Formula One, surrounded by a lot of people. And for, sorry, Formula E, but I heard a bit of Formula One gossip. And I think you said as well that there's a bit of news on the internet that Ferrari have put a big bid into Adrian Newey. But apparently, it's pretty much official that Adrian Newey is going to Ferrari. So there you go. That's
The
the gossip.
dream,
I actually heard it wasn't gossip. I heard it was a done deal. So,
the dream team. A lot of it's all
yeah.
about. I've read something today that says he's been offered 100 million pounds for 4 years, and but also that Ferrari prepared to pay out, buy out Red Bull to get this problem with he can't design another car till 2027. They keep on
Six.
saying.
Oh, okay.
No, six. Well, that's what everyone wants them, six. So that's what you want Newey for, is for when the six, this new active area. I mean, it'll be right up Newey Street. So, but apparently, Red Bull are saying, well, he can't do anyone else's design till 2027. So that is kicking off there. And yes, I've read a bit about it. I think that would be the dream team. I mean, Lewis and Ferrari, it would just, I mean, I knew him. I mean, it's like why Lewis went to, everyone wants to go to Ferrari. You're trying to pretend it, but as a racing driver, anyone that works within Formula One, everyone's been down to that little test track at Modena, you've seen the little building,
Fiorano.
Enzo's desk is there, the whole Enzo is just, the provenance is all there. Everybody actually wants to drive Ferrari, work for Ferrari. But
Speaking
now
of
the
which,
other thing,
I mentioned that today because you drove, of course, the V12. Jeremy Clarkson was in the Enzo, and you in the V12 Ferrari. I don't know whatever it was, F60 or whatever it was, but
640, the 640, yeah.
around Fiorano. Wow, that must be one of your most special
Yeah.
memories. It,
Oh, absolutely.
brilliant.
In fact, I'm going to I'm doing a little bit of filming with some bloke called Clarkson.
Oh no, it's all gone wrong. For those who are listening, Tiff's has dropped his iPad.
And there is the story, which I'm just taking it because we're doing a little memorabilia thing. And that is the story of that, me and the Formula One Ferrari and Jeremy and the, funny you should say that.
Oh wow,
Is
yeah,
that what you
we're only
call
talking
crashing a
talk with
computer?
yeah, or we can see your bank details as well now on your screen. See his comprehensive notes. See
Oh,
how good he is at notes. I've got a few notes here. We're
what?
back in action. So
There we go.
Fiorano, that's still on my bucket list actually to drive around Fiorano. I don't know why. It's just one of those iconic things, I think.
But also in the news, though, so that's one half of this great stuff going on. But it's a big story again in the news today in England, that there's a huge Verstappen Mercedes meeting after Miami Grand Prix. Lots of details coming through from some gossiper. And it's not just it's a meeting that they've named. Both Verstappens will be there. Verstappen's manager, Raymond Vermeulen, will be there. Toto's going to be there. The Mercedes CEO is going to be at this meeting. And Ineos's Jim Ratcliffe, who, of course, his sponsors. So a real heavy hitters meeting, sort of rumoured quite strongly to be happening after Miami. So, and the big
Wow.
thing is, I mean, especially with this Newey happening, because it's a bit like when Lewis went to Mercedes because Niki Lauda said, when they change the regulations, boy, Mercedes is the place to be. And of course, Red Bull are building their own engine for 2026. So they've got that, their first ever self-designed engine. They've got a lot of Honda information, obviously. And of course, if they're after Newey, they wouldn't have the best chassis and may not have the best engine for 2026. So it's not just the scandal that might upset all the what's going on inside Red Bull, but there's very good racing reasons why Max might wish to leave and have a year out of Red Bull. So it's all brewing up, brewing
Yeah, that's
up.
very that could be very interesting, but I think Lewis has played an absolute blinder. If that is true with Newey,
Yeah.
and Ferrari are really going to find form at exactly the right time when Lewis joins. Speaking of Verstappen, by the way, Jos was, because now I'm a rally advocate, yep. of course. Jos was rallying again over the weekend in Belgium.
Oh, was he?
Apparently he loves it. Apparently Max loves it as well, but he can't really talk about it for obvious reasons. But yeah, it's I can see why. I can see why.
And every driver loves doing. Yeah, I've done two rally GBs and survived. Rally Scotland. I've done about four rallies. Won my first ever rally with Tony Mason sitting beside me, the Ford RS 2001 make series. That was a long time ago. Really? Everyone loves rally. And the modern rally driver is like driving historic rally cars. It's like getting in a Mark 1 Escort and drifting it around. So,
I didn't ask them what appetite they had about doing any world sports cars or something like that, but there wasn't really the appetite there.
Sebastian Loeb's done quite a bit at Le Mans, so he went to Le Mans and did very well.
Yeah.
So, right, well, that was your weekend. Whilst you were swanning around, as I've said, there was so much motorsport. It was a hell of an entertaining weekend. We actually got a merry. Oh, I was going four wheel foot. I'm a car man. Maybe MotoGP was the most entertaining, but four wheels is my prime thing. So the IndyCar race was just amazing. This Barber Motorsport Park in Alabama. And it's this awesome track. I mean, it's just grey tarmac, a white line of grass. The odd little curb here and there. Gravel track, sort of quite a long bit of grass before you go in the gravel track on the faster corners. Undulates, blind crest, diving, dipping, very fast, very flowing, but not really famous for overtaking. Sometimes you always make these wonderful driver's tracks, and they forget to make a couple of nice dead stop, you know, but there is one hairpin where they all go. And it's a very wide, it's a bit like sort of Druids, but even wider than Druids. And what I like about it is you try to run the outside and you don't quite make it. The narrowish curb before the grass is quite a bumpy, rough one. You know, so you get penalised. You know, if you go over the track limit, the bumpy curb, so you don't make the overtake, doesn't work. So instead of these smooth runoffs where they just go wider. So anyway, it's this awesome track, but with usually very little overtakings, only one point. But this weekend, the no overtaking seemed to just disappear. I don't know why. We had the warm-up with the Indy NXT, the Formula 2 cars, and Louis Foster, this British driver, who's one of the favourites for this year to win the championship. I think he finished about third last year. He finished third in the first race in St. Petersburg, but then he never works well at Barber because his car wouldn't work. The electronic bug was in it. There was something in there, and he qualified 21st and last. Weekend over. Can't overtake at Barber. He finished fifth. He came through the entire pack. Including Jamie Chanwick, who are tremendously, I mentioned Goodwin saying she's up for this year. And she qualified fifth in this field of 21. She was only 0.3 off pole, 0.4, 0.37 or
which
something.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, really good. She was running a very strong sixth, not sort of moving forwards or backwards, but then Louis caught her up and was one of the hardest people, but Louis was stuck behind her for quite a few laps. Eventually, when he got by her, she got sort of pushed back after the manoeuvre and lost another place. Then she tried to get that place back. But clipped the curb on the apex of turn one, which spun her off into the gravel, sadly. But she was a really good race. Two Americans dominated again. Again, it was Siegel beat Abel in Miami, then Abel beat Siegel in Portland Barber. So two Americans are dominating up the front at the moment. But if Louis can just get a good qualifying in, we hope he can. Ireland's James Rowe was third on the podium. He did last year as well. So in the NXT warmed us up. And then the IndyCar race was just awesome. I mean, just 27 cars around this narrow, undulating, with all sorts of different strategies, a big thing at this track. A lot of races in America, it's, you know, if it's a two-stop race on fuel, because they change fuel, which we obviously don't have in Formula One. It's one of those tracks, if you go a bit slower, like a Formula E, you only need two stops. But if you go flat out, it's a three stops. So you have to decide. And whether you jump to a three-stop or a two-stop can depend on the safety car, when you dive into the pits, you know, whether you're in the right position. But before then, we had this Penske scandal, which has been still filling the world of America, because Penske got George Eating from the St. Petersburg race. But he didn't turn up until Long Beach. It was in Long Beach first practice when the computers weren't working, so they couldn't switch on to the push-to-pass that the drivers have, like DRS. You can't use it until it's switched on. And all of a sudden, the tech boys were saying, hold on a minute, the Penske cars are using push-to-pass, but it hasn't been enabled. So, Penske's. Now, apparently, when they were testing for that one-off race in Palm Springs or whatever, they were allowed to delete the enabling of the push-to-pass. but apparently they hadn't, at Penske, re-deleted it when they turned up for the races. So if they hadn't seen them at Long Beach, they might have done the Long Beach race, because you can't use it at the starts and restarts. So now, but the drivers sort of instinctively, well, so the drivers do it. I mean, it was Jovis Newgard was in tears trying to explain, because he won the race. They didn't take it away from them. Both disqualified him and the Kiwi, Scott McLaughlin. And he said, well, yeah, I knew I was using it. And they were saying, well, you can't use it at a restart. Well, I thought the rules had changed. His only defence was he thought the rules had been changed. Wow. And all the other drivers are taking the piss, saying, you know, yeah, well, you know. So lots of eating humble pie. And and of course, Penske owns the IndyCar series. And you know, Roger Penske is one of the most, you know, honest men in the world. So he's massively embarrassed by it all. So there's lots of joking going. All the drivers were being interviewed before the race about the Penske situation. But then, of course,
who makes that decision? Who makes that decision to say, okay, let's do it. Let's try and get a little bit extra on the start.
I don't know. It's sort of like not deleting it. It's not like you put it. You didn't put a cheat in. You sort of left the possibility to cheat in the car. Of course, the drivers won't use it, will they? What, a driver not taking any advantage he can. Oh, it's a lot like the Benetton traction control sort of accusations way back in the olden days that was never really proven either. But anyway, to turn the Penske world around, they then qualify first and second. Scotty McLaughlin was on pole from Joseph Newgarten, who was on pole. Yeah, Newgarten, McLaughlin was on pole. Newgarten was the one disqualified. So McLaughlin went on pole with Willpower second. And this race, I haven't got all the details of the race. There was so much diving, wheel banging, unbelievable about it. And again, they've got decent size pods. So the front wheel goes between the front and rear wheels. You know, they just bounce out and push and make rubber marks. Whereas, of course, the Formula One cars, these pathetic flaws that come out. So often now, the first corner, you get a wheel in between your wheels and Formula One. I've broken my floor. I've lost 28 points of downforce. I can't drive the car. So they make these cars so that you can hit each other a bit. They make them rugged. They go over curbs and bounce. And of course, also this strategy, you have to run the red wall tire, the faster, softer tire, and the slower black tire, which is quite a... They don't degrade like Formula One tires, but they're just not as quick. But you've got to run them both. It's a huge strategy race. But it ended up with the two stoppers didn't work out and the three stoppers did. So in fact, it was quite out front. You know, McLaughlin led all the way from Will Power pretty much, apart from when they stopped and they had to think. But there was a highlight in the middle. Georgina was the highlight in the middle of the race.
I saw this.
This guy that owns Barber Motorsport Park, it's all dressed up. The whole place is like a fantasy world place. And all of a sudden, we'd had this vision of Georgina that was pasted onto the gantry over the track, falling vertically, hit the ground with her feet first, and then
Georgina. For those of you who don't know, it's a mannequin.
A mannequin. So he sat, and then Gina fell over. Luckily, only one arm was out. Her hand got run over. She lost her right hand. But you know, McLaughlin's been pictured afterwards. You know, sitting with her in the room. You know, holding hands. I had to see how Georgina was, and her. So, of course, in Formula One,
where did all that start?
Just in the middle of the race. She just suddenly fell to the ground in the middle of the race.
Yeah, but where did the whole Georgina thing start? Or that's the first time.
All the drivers know, she's always been there. No, she's been there for years. Okay. So this weird Barber Motorsport Park with this eccentric owner has dressed the whole place up with lots of fantasy statues and statuettes and mannequins. So, you know, I don't know who overtook who for most of the race.
That'd be very bizarre with your race engineer saying, okay, well, at Georgina, that's your breaking point. Yeah. Your breaking point's Georgina.
But there was just so much overtaking. They spin off and they come back on. Even the top guy, Scott Dixon, you know, he, on the one corner where you can overtake, he ran in too deep and had to go to the grass and hit the car in front, 360 spins and back through the gravel, back out again, get your strategy right, climb back through the field. You know, although most of the contact they let go, if you spin someone out with unnecessary contact, you don't have 5 or 10 seconds you have to work out at the end of the race. You have a drive through the pit lane. Listen, you don't muck about. The stewards say, no, and then the penalty's done. You know, you can still catch up with strategies. It was just epic. And again, the great thing about India, so this kid, he's about 25, I'd say, kid, Lundqvist, found his name now. Linus Lundqvist, this 25-year-old Swedish kid, who won the Indy NXT 2 years ago. He won the British Formula 3 Championship, I think about 2018. Yeah, and he's 2022 NXT champion. He had three races last year, just a one-off chance, and really impressed. I forget he's with other midfield teams. So he got signed by Ganassi, Chip Ganassi, for this season. And his second race with Ganassi, he was running the same three-stop strategy as the two in front of him. And there he was, dicing with the leaders, both world champions, you know, right on their gearbox, and got the podium place. Because you've got a car that, if you can drive, you can be up front, you know. I mean, he qualified down the pack, but, you know, strategy got him up the front. It's the place where dreams are made. I've had one Twitter man today who's finally said, I used to get so annoyed with you going on and on about flipping IndyCar, but now I've finally been converted and understand it's more entertaining than Formula One.
Everybody here, particularly the people that know, there's a kid called James from Motorsport magazine, and you know, he says the same. He's a very knowledgeable kid, and he just said, yeah, IndyCar is just amazing. Like you've always said, you can see the drivers, and the cars are smaller. And we all wish that Formula One would go that way. The purists do anyway. So, but forget Formula One, forget IndyCar. Of course, WRC is the way forward now.
Of course, then we went down to Spain to watch the MotoGPs. And again, Jerez. I talked about Jerez before. And when I watched them at Road America,
it's good for tracks.
It's a proper bike track, Jerez. Yeah. Perfect. And it's, of course, it's got this amphitheatre halfway around the track. I think turns 9 and 10. It's a two double right-hander with a huge bank of Spanish fans getting up with the sangria or whatever they'll enjoy themselves with. an amazing track. And it had this great weekend. There was a bit of drama because it rained again. A lot of Europe seemed to rain on the morning of the weekend. And they had these weepers coming up through little spots in the middle of the corners where the water just creeps back through, even if it's sunny and hot, and just seeps out in little spots. So they were going down like proverbial flies, as to be said, the moto boys.
I never heard of a seeper before.
Weepers. It's American weepers. It happens a lot in America on bank circuits that are sitting on soil. So you've got to you get a little water behind the banking and it seeps out. They're called weepers. The first Rockingham IndyCar race where I was at, the great Rockingham, the one and only Rockingham IndyCar race, suffered terribly from weepers. All morning they were trying to dry out the weepers. So there were a lot of people falling off, including the next Pedro Costa, this Colombian kid, David Alonso, who in most of the practice sessions was a second quicker than anyone else on Moto3. Amazing. But he was leading as usual when he lost the front end. Hit one of those spots, down went the front. Well, they blamed it all on weepers. I know they might have used that as an excuse. So Alonso didn't win. He was down his back. And the Max Verstappen of Dutch motorsport, Colin Vijver, won the Moto3. British boy Scott Ogden qualified 13th and, as usual, had a bad first lap. Sorry, Scott, it's always your problem. Finished 19th. Josh Watchley qualified 22, finished 23rd. So the Brits still not really getting up to Moto3 stardom. Moto2, Scott, Jake Dixon's back, qualified third. He had that injury early in the season, but he crashed out. He hit a weep. They all blame the weepers, all of them. He lost the front end, down he went. The Moto2 is fairly processional. This, the guy that's already got a contract for next year in MotoGP, this 19-year-old Fermín Aldegaya from Spain, romped away from pole to win. And the main story is Joe Roberts, American fans out there. This is maybe your next American MotoGP rider. He's had 3 second places on the trot now. So Joe Roberts. He came from 11th on the grid and caught up.
Most famous bike rider from America?
Kenny Roberts. Kenny Roberts, not related.
I was going to say, don't say Evel Knievel, for goodness sake.
Kenny Roberts. Moto2 fairly processional, but the GP racing at the moment is just amazing, mainly due to Marc Marquez. So Marc Marquez, who got off his horrible Honda that kept on throwing him down the road, got onto a Ducati, albeit a satellite Ducati, only 2023 with the which is his team. So many satellite teams, I forget who's on which flipping one. I've written it somewhere, but you all know it's a satellite one. He was on pole, but the sprint race was just this amazing event. Bagnaia was taken out early on. He was going too wide with someone around turn one, and Brad Binder, who was always a bit ambitious in his KTM and sprint races, tried to make it three wide on the inside. That took Bagnaia out. So we then had this amazing race with Marquez was in the lead. Then Jorge Martin, the sprint hero, he took the lead. Then he folded the front under, maybe on a weeper, going to the down went Martin. They're all crashing. And then Marquez got past. Then Marquez crashed right in front of the amphitheatre at turn 10. Down went the front, off into the gravel. They all ran back, trying to pick up the bike, get back again. And there was one attempt, one lap, because now I forget who's leading now. Who was way out front? I lost the man who was out front. Who won the flipping race? I've forgotten who's out leading.
You get paid big bucks for this.
I know, but I haven't written down who was leading. I've got the right people crashing now.
Where's Susie Perry when you need her?
Where's Susie? Because on one lap, the three of them went down. There's one really fast turn five, which had been taking lots of people out. And Marcus's brother, Marcus's brother, Bastianini on the other, Works Ducati, and Binder, all went down. One, two, three. They didn't hit each other. Nobody made a move under it, but they all just on slightly the wrong line. And just three of them went on. And Pedro Costa had a very, he qualified 10th. He had a very quiet weekend, Pedro Costa. He suddenly found himself in second place behind whoever won.
I don't know. I can't Google it because I'm using my phone. God.
Who won? I've forgotten who won. They're all falling down. I've forgotten who won now. It's driving me mad. MotoGP.
We'll put it in the comments.
I'm going to find it now. I'm going too mad. So,
was it an entertaining race?
That was the sprint. Well, that was just the sprint race. So I'm just getting down there. So,
this is like a well-oiled machine now, podcast. Nothing ever goes wrong.
There's so many of these names, these foreign names. It's driving me mad.
You're good with the names, though. Thank goodness you say the names, not me.
And a Jorge Martin won it. Martin, I've got Martin's crash mixed up with the Grand Prix was where Martin went. That's why I've got made a mistake. So yeah, Jorge Martin won, got to the lead.
Trust your notes, Tim.
And Marcus, what?
Trust your notes.
Oh, no, missed it. Well, it's on another page, you see. And then Fabio Quartararo is having an awful time with his Yamaha that doesn't work very well. He qualified 23rd and finished third. He came through all the crashes and everything else to finish third and then got disqualified. Well, got a penalty because he broke the minimum tyre pressure rule. So he got dumped down to fifth. So that was just a sprint.
It's to be chuffed with that, 23rd to fifth. You still got to be pleased with that. But yeah. No one likes it. No one likes a penalty after.
We come to Grand Prix on the Sunday. And there's just this fight. It was only a two-way dice at the end. I mean, there's lots going on. But we end up this most epic race between Francesco Bagnaia on the factory Ducati and Marc Marquez on the Gresini, of course. His Gresini satellite at Ducati, the 23 bike. And Bagnaia qualified seventh, which is why he got knocked out of the sprint race. He qualified badly and he was middle of the mad pack. And he made this move down the outside, main straight, first lap, hairpin bend in the main straight. Of course, they've got long braking distance, these bikes. But he went down the outside of everybody, bar the leader, and just slotted in front. So he went from seventh to second, halfway around the first lap. And Marquez drifted back to about fourth place, I think, earlier on from pole position. So then Bagnaia is chasing Jorge Martin, who under pressure from Bagnaia folded the front under at the last corner. That was when he went out. So Marquez then had to get back past Bezzecchi, who was in second place. Marco Bezzecchi on the Team VR 46 satellite bikes. Got past and catches up Bagnaia, and this race is now on. Because he was about 2 seconds back, and he closes in and closes in. And they overtook him in his favourite in front of this amphitheatre. So it's turn 10, but it's got turn 11 straight after. It's like a double right hand. It's a brilliant overtaking corner because Bagnaia knew Marquez was coming. So he braked really late, knowing that Marquez would outbrake himself to do the overtake, which of course he did. So it's raw.
Undercut.
Into the second, yes. Yeah, so then Bagnaia comes back underneath. And Marquez just leans into his front wheel. I mean, he knows he's there. He gets rubber on his leathers. He's hitting the front wheel. He's almost leaning on the front fork of Bagnaia's bike, trying not to lose his place. He lost it back again. And then he did it again about two laps later. This time Bagnaia took the lead easily. And he just pulled away at the end. Marquez didn't quite have the speed at the end. But it was just this, when he was interviewed on Marquez, you know, he pointed to his rubber like a proud, you know, man, this is real racing, this is real racing. And even though he finished second, he stopped at the amphitheatre, he climbed a huge debris fencing and the flares were going off and Susie Peng, I'm sure, was crying. And it was just absolutely entertainment that you cannot defeat. Just, if you miss that, and if you miss the IndyCar, you're all Muppets. So I know that got confused. It's having a sprint race and then another race, but all the facts are mixed up. I'm not even sure he finished third in the end. It was, there were five Ducatis. Oh, Bezzecchi came on. He had a good third place, Bezzecchi. The top five were all Ducatis. It's still a Ducati-dominated race, sadly.
Do you realise people don't watch a lot of motorsport over the weekend so they can listen to this on a Monday and get their get the whole weekend's round?
This is what you missed. And then, but you didn't really miss Formula E, did you? I know you were there and I know you were sort of enjoying the atmosphere. The trouble is, again, I'm glad to say so. Poor old Commissioner Sam Bird, of course, who's crash practice. Looks like he broke his wrist. Doesn't look good. Getting locked up on his brakes. A bit frightening because this fly-by-wire braking, where apparently you don't have rear brakes, it's on regen only. But he locked up both fronts and speared off down the escape road and caught his wrist nastily. But Taylor Barnard got a place to have a Formula E debut. But they're all into this peloton word now. Were they talking peloton to you in your circles? Oh, it's a peloton race.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting because with Formula One, any motorsport, you want to try and get the first lap for a bit of a video so you see all the cars together. But actually, with Formula E, it doesn't matter because they're in this peloton, and they did use that word a lot, for so many laps that you can get your video of them all together whenever you want.
Yeah. But then they're sort of talking peloton like it's a plus point. They've got this word.
It's not a plus. It's not a plus. I know. It's not racing.
It's a massive negative. The point is, they had these two. They had it at Portland. The big one was at Portland, America last year, where they're going back. Then they had it when they went down to Misano this year on proper racetracks. On proper wide racetracks, you're just shuffling for 20 of the 25 laps or 25 of the 30 laps. You're just trying to move yourself up to a place to go racing and save as much electricity. And of course, they can go five wide at some of those wide tracks. They were, you know, it's overtaking, nudging and knocking their noses off because, you know, they all try and get back into line and so many noses. But of course, in Monaco, it's very hard to shuffle your way up the order. So people were more desperate then, because obviously last you've got to be in the top six when it's suddenly go time with five laps racing.
Especially
so
Monaco,
they were all just knocking noses off, and it was just ridiculous. And then
dive bombing. Fairmont Corner was the most common place. They're just dive bombing down there.
And they block. They see someone coming. Massive blocking, you know, and they're all trying to sit back and not move, waiting to, I want to be there for the go. And then I think when it went, it was after safety car period, which made it look even more obvious. So they get to lap 25 and then the radio, okay, you've got enough electricity left, go race.
Go.
And then we had the most boring five lap procession because, of course, Monaco is a single line track. So nobody tried to overtake anybody. So when they're actually racing with equal power and full throttle, there wasn't really a race. And it was like two by two. The computers that worked best was Jaguar, who finished first and second. Well done, Mitch Evans. Then the second best computer was Penske's computer that got them to third and fourth. Then the Porsche computer should have been fifth and sixth, except there was one overtake when Roland barged by and got the sixth place off of one of the Porsches. And it would have been Nissan seventh and eighth. So they're paired up with the best computers that make the electricity last the longest.
Well, I met Anthony Joshua, so that was my highlight. And he's a big old unit. He's about twice the size of me. He's bloody huge.
But Does he live down there?
No, I think he was just there with his huge entourage, about 20 people. I got Nick De Vries to sign a card for you, dear Tiff. So I got that for you as well.
Oh, honoured with that. But when you're sitting on the boat, were you on the boat for the race?
Yeah, we watched the whole race from the boat.
And can you hear him? Oh, I mean, is it just a droning noise?
It's a horrid noise. I love going, and I really enjoyed it. Monaco's a good place to go, especially if you're not paying. But it's not for me. I'm sorry, it's not for me. It's just not for me because it's all too processional. And then these are some of the best drivers in the world. And then they're not racing.
Did you manage to get one in the corner and say, do you really enjoy this or is it crap?
No, I didn't. No one like that. But so we had not just pit lane, but we were on the other side of the, so we were just walking up and down with the drivers, but I didn't really chat. I chatted to Nick De Vries, Da Costa. But no, I didn't ask them that question because they're not going to admit that, are they?
No, I
know. You never know if you're recording something. But it was maybe... Cupra, thank you, because it was brilliant. I'm glad I scratched the Formula E itch.
Scratched the itch and lost it. Back home in Britain, we had a bit of a wet windy. I was flashing through at times 30, watching all the races. British GT at Silverstone, very wet. And it was all strategy. The trouble with some British GT, they have to pit twice and change drivers twice. So half the top teams came in on the second lap. So they had a safety car start. So they came into the pits and changed drivers, which I hate the look of.
I thought you had to do that after a certain amount of time, though. You had to have
No, you can come straight in, apparently, British GT. And they have different lengths of pit stops from different drivers. And the sometimes when the trouble, you're trying to do a stint between yellows, because if there's a yellows come out, you change. But you mustn't stay out in the car for too long. So you might have to pit. Oh, and there's a lot of strategy, British GT, which does make it frustrating to follow and understand, especially when the weather throws it up in the air, you know, and turns it upside down with too many yellows and too much confusion. So it's still spectacular seeing, you know, 37 GT cars flying around Silverstone in the rain. But McLaren had a rare whip. Sean Balfe and Adam Smalley. And in fact, McLaren's remember they're not usually up front. Usually Mercedes and Lamborghinis. Because the McLaren's, the Mercedes came second, then there's two more McLarens. The Lamborghini was fifth, the best one. And five McLarens in the top seven. And the Artura, is it? Yeah, won GT4. GT4. So McLaren's had a very good day in the rain.
It's such a shame. You don't expect the end of April to have torrential rain like that. And I know it was showers, Donington, which we'll come on to now. Well, April showers, but not torrential. Not torrential rain. Because it's...
They got away with it, Donny. Wasn't it Silverstone? It's rained all the way through the race sort of thing. But Donny's had this flood. So he got delayed. It was embarrassing. It looked awful. But eventually they got out. They had one wet race. And then it was a really sunny, dry day for the rest of the day. So they actually got away with most of it. BTCC's all about recovering, really, from the boredom of 2023. Because they replaced the weight penalties with this boost thing. And of course, it wasn't enough last year. So you couldn't use this. They had 30 extra horsepower. So they've doubled the boost to 60 horsepower. And it certainly had an effect. So great things, I think, ahead for BTCC because they're mixing it. Also, there's tyre rules now. I think if there can be winner race, you have to switch them to the hard tyre for race two. So you can't do the race one, race two on the best tyre, then reverse grid, go to the rubbish tyre when you don't really care anyway. So they've done a lot of thinking. Tim Harvey was explaining it very well. Well done, Tim. Difficult to understand, but he was doing a great job. So we've got this closer pack and the more boost, which hasn't really worked. Donington, they were on one tyre. They didn't have the alternate tyres. And it looks like there's this pack of five, the pack of the five usuals, four usuals. So Tom Ingram, first two races looked a bit, it was close. With Tom Ingram, Ash Sutton second, Jake Hill third. Colin Turkington was a fifth and a fourth. And then Josh Cook in the Toyota had a fourth. So it's the same pack up front in the normal race. But the reverse grid race was the best of the weekend. Rob Huff got drawn on pole. Huffy back in Toyotas. He hasn't got his speed yet. But the Toyota's on the pace. And he led. Huffy led like only Huffy can. Elbows out everywhere. Rob's brilliant. He just gives everything. He doesn't care who he elbows. But he eventually got shuffled back. I think the tyres went. And Aidan Moffitt, who'd finished seventh in the race two, and so he got the draw, he's third on the grid for the reverse grid. He got to the front. Then he held off this pack, using his boost cleverly. He held off all these experienced stars, all the champions, Turkington, Sutton, Ingram, and Hill, in this Hill not a champion yet, in a brilliant race, really, really used the button. And if it's a usable button, then we don't need the weight. I would have said go back to the weight penalties because it's a simpler. But it worked. So there you go, BTC. So I'm praising
you.
How was
Jade?
Jade commentary? Well, she was the commentary box. She was great. She was in the interviewee place, you know, not commenting. I don't know. She commented as well. There's a lot. And of course, all the other support races were excellent. The Legends had his horrendous shunt. It was Legends. They were scary.
The
tyres stick out. Oh, blooming hell, fire. So that was all a bit scary. But in general, Formula 4s were really great racing. It was just a good packed weekend as usual BTC packed goes.
That came up on my memories on my phone, actually. You and Tim Harvey at Castle Coombe when we went there. That must have been 5 years ago. Can you remember that? Castle Coombe's 50th it was. So you Formula Ford.
Oh, we're both in Formula Ford, yeah.
When are you going to race next in your Formula Ford?
too upset.
When are you going to race next? You haven't raced for youngster.
Someone might drive in to be a break.
I did
all those years racing with John Spears when he put me in all sorts of different cars, so I was busy doing his race season, but that wore me out. I couldn't keep up the pace. So I'm bringing out again.
Why don't you do a Formula Ford this year? Let us know anyone that Formula Ford stuff when the next one is. Well, you all know when it is.
In fact, the Formula Ford is very down on grid this year, so I could slip out and never win again. I'd have another win. So I might look at the opposition.
I would love that so much. I've got a nice trailer now. I've got a De Bond trailer.
You could cruise us over. So just quickly back to America for the NASCAR around the Dover Mile. It's high bank, 1 mile. It's a bit of a single line track. There's a lot of action. It was good, exciting racing, but not really one of the thrillers of the year, except there was this wonderful battle at the end between Dirty Den, as I always called Denny Hamlin.
Kyle.
Well, I made that up this morning. No, well, I made it. I was trying to think. So I've got Dirty Den, and I've got to have something with Kyle, haven't I? I came out with Cuddly Kyle. Well, he's a small guy. I'm sure every mum loves Kyle Larson because he's cuddly Kyle for today. Anyway, Cuddly Kyle, that's worse than Cuddly. He only qualified 21st. I don't know what happened. And he got right the way through, as he always works his way through. And he won the second stage, I think. But then he had a couple of bad restarts, which he was moaning about afterwards, because it's a track where if you're very equal, it's very hard to overtake. So that's why it's a bit of a single line track. And he spun the wheels. He was trying to judge them. He had Dirty Den. He was on pole, so he had the choice of when to go with the accelerator. And when he went, he was tapped at the same time by whoever was behind him. And he spun the wheels and Dirty Den got in front of him. And Dirty Den had a good short run car. So Dirty Den pulled out a lead. And then Kyle in the last laps was catching. But as with all motorsport, plague of it, even something as simple looking as a NASCAR, there's aero involved. He calls it, air blocking. So Kyle said, as soon as I caught within two car lengths of Denny Hamlin, Hamlin was on the lower line and Larson used his high line, which quickly loves being up high. But Hamlin, as soon as he saw his mirror, he just goes up and just air blocks him. So you just go up, throw Larson dirty. You know, even Kyle said, he wasn't being dirty. He quickly said, he wasn't being dirty. I'm not accusing Hamlin of cheating. It's just the way you drive. So you just watch your mirror and you move up and you throw a lot of dirty air over the car chasing you and they lose the downforce. And so he got right close but couldn't get anywhere. And then...
He hasn't won for some time, actually, has he? Carl Larson. Yeah,
Kyle. Get killed for this. And then I also, just for you, because I knew you were doing sod all sitting drinking your champagne. Is that swearing sod all? I don't know if that's a swear word or not. I actually did on the internet, merely to see if it worked, watch the first ever autonomous racing race.
I saw some highlights. I saw a crash.
They tried so hard. They had a very American lady presenting, a very glamorous lady up front. They got Jolyon Palmer and Alex Brundle down there. Good gig, boys. Can you get me on the next one, please? Then they've got Danny Kvyat, who's employed by them to sort of... They've got... they're super former Dallaras. They're the same as the Japanese championship cars. They're proper race cars, you know.
You know who the biggest name was that they got there?
No.
Joe Priday, Lucky Supercars.
Was Joe there?
Yeah. Anyway, everybody.
Kvyat... race one of them, pretended to race, played with the fastest one in a demo run. In the warm-ups, they've been spinning. They break early and spin. They turn right. One turn right, just straight into the barrier. There was only four competitors. But the race itself, I think they'd line them up in sort of speed order. And they went around on two parade laps. They're supposed to be on safety car speeds. That's sort of on the computer told them. When it came round to them, they're going to go now. They're going to go. One of them just stopped. and the other's up front. So when the one stopped, instead of going, they pulled the full course yellow. So then they press full course yellow and all the cars are back to 50 miles an hour, 50 kilometers an hour. So they all went around at 50 kilometers an hour until the one that had stopped got going again. I don't know. This was about an hour later.
Who is this appealing to? Tell me.
Well, I don't know.
Tell me who's this appealing to?
Well, Geeks, but obviously, autonomous people. There are loads of universities. I think all the teams are run by universities. It's a university project, these sorts of things.
It's not a university project. They've had teams and teams of people there for months. Just at Abu Dhabi before it even went live. I get esports, amazing. Sim racing, all that sort of stuff.
When they'd got them going, they started the race and the front two went storming off. And of course, they went around for another 2 laps of 40 kilometres an hour. By now, the evening was getting cold, as it does in Bahrain in the dark. So I think the lead car, Bahrain, wasn't it?
Was it? Are you sure? I'm sure it's Abu Dhabi.
No, it was Abu Dhabi. I've been saying Bahrain all along. It was Abu Dhabi. Of course it was Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So the lead car was storming down the straight at quite a reasonable pace, apparently only 15 seconds a lap slower, though it looked less than that. And they just locked up all the brakes at the end of the straight when he hit the brakes, probably because the tyres were cold. So then, of course, they pressed the full course yellow. Now, what are you not allowed to do on a full course yellow as a racing driver? What are you not allowed to do during full course yellows? You're driving around at 40 kilometres an hour, but what can't you do?
Overtake.
So the car's behind, the car that spun and stopped. I can't overtake. So they stopped.
Of course, can overtake if the car's stopped or crashed.
Yeah, but they didn't know. They didn't know that. Yeah. Their little computer brains, didn't they? So they stayed stopped. And then they had to cancel all that, and reboot them and get them back to the pits. And I think about 5.5 hours later, they finished 3 laps and declared a winner.
Look, I love innovation. I love the fact that people are actually doing this. But how on earth they get the budget for it, where the use is and where the fans are is beyond me.
Well, I suppose they're still dreaming of autonomous road cars. Some of these people will be be employed by Tesla and people, I suppose, to make the autonomous stuff work better. I mean, I went on a BMW thing 10 years ago or something. It was a bit of a cheat. And I had to race an autonomous BMW around a slalom course, cones, tight, twisting. Because what they'd done is they'd programmed on a wide open, empty piece of tarmac the BMW to do certain manoeuvres and then put the cones up afterwards.
Exactly. So
it wasn't reacting to the cones. I had to then react to the cones and I did beat it, obviously. and when the better prepared cars were on their own, they were following a perfect racing line and going a nice... So I can understand that working, this advancement. But as soon as anything else interrupts their smooth path. Anyway, I watched the first autonomous racing league race.
Where are we going next week?
Miami Beach, baby. Apparently, there are masses of superstars gathering in a car park. They can go on a real beach or they can go on an artificial beach where there are artificial boats, apparently an artificial lake. They can see probably Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones in various concerts. They can eat and drink themselves to their bloated, fat and pink and drunk. And apparently there's a bit of cars going around, which nobody's really bothered with. It's got a sprint race and a Grand Prix. So we've got two Formula One races. We've got the Formula One Academy ladies around there, Miami. So, yeah, Miami Beach, baby. That's where to go.
And Scuderia, the Ferrari Scuderia team are dressed not in Rosso Corsa, Rosso Red, they're in blue.
And every driver's probably got another crash helmet colour for Miami.
Or something.
Cowboy hats,
Miami Dolphins or something.
Dolphins, they'll all be there, the razzmatazz. If you've not got a spare 20 grand, we could pop over 20 grand. Might just about buy two tickets for £20,000.
The only trouble I do is when I get invited by a brand. That's the only trouble I do. Isn't it the death of Senna's anniversary? Is it 30 years?
This
it
weekend. Must be 30 years, this 1994, weekend, yeah. Yeah, this weekend. This
so
weekend,
it'll all be about tributes to Senna this weekend then.
Doubtless. That will hopefully be mentioned. But it's... It's now, WRC? Isn't it, today? We've only got British Superbikes having started in Spain, returned to Britain for their first British Superbike round on British circuits. So that's Alton Park is the place to be. Live motorsport, go to Alton Park. British Superbikes will be awesome. And then
we need to chap up Stuart Higgs as well and get some tickets for
go back
BSP.
Again. Yeah, we can give some away for prizes. And then there's just NASCAR and American Canada. Good 1.5. The 1.5 mile ovals, I think, are always the better ones to watch in NASCAR. And there's one, this was Kansas City, baby. So that's all. We go for next weekends where everything's happening. And then nothing Then after Miami, in 2 weeks' time, there's Indy Lights, Indy Racing, there's World Endurance Championship, there's IMSA Sports Cars, World Rally Championship, MotoGP, there's NASCARs, Brands Hitchinigam, there's Formula E again. It's weird, isn't it? We seem to go from one mad weekend to a quiet weekend to a mad weekend.
And the Formula One
but
does
it was
get
such
busy.
A good weekend. Was to be at home, watching the telly, not drinking champagne in the sunshine. It was a very rewarding weekend for anyone that loves motorsport. MotoGP and IndyCar, by far the best winners for entertainment this weekend. And don't forget Georgina. Georgina hopefully should be back in a better, tied up better, and back for another year next year. Well, I bet she won't be over the track. I think she'll be outside of the track.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining. I'm back to Blighty.
And you're next weekend. Surely you're not at home watching telly. Surely you must be somewhere now.
I am, and I can't wait. I have got one more brand to visit this week. On Wednesday night, I am with Stellantis, who are Fiat, Alfa Romeo, Citroen, DS, etc. I'm going to watch Take That with Stellantis. How about that? Thanks for coming.
For once, I'm glad I'm not where you are. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Very good.
Where are Take That at? Where are they at?